Women Talking features Egyptian feminist Doreya Shafiq, whose biographer, Professor Cynthia Nelson, is interviewed by Susie Kane.
Some of our listeners may be familiar with the name of the Egyptian feminist Hoda Sharawi. And you describe in your book that in 1923, the same year that Egypt drafted its first constitution and held elections, Sharawi returned to Egypt from a meeting of the International Association of Women in Rome and symbolically took off her veil. 2 years later, Sharawi founded the Egyptian Feminist Union, and at this time, the subject of your biography, Doreya Shafiq, who would be instrumental in gaining the vote for women in Egypt, was just starting her teenage years studying at the French Lycée. Now, Cynthia, would you sketch in for us a little of Doreya Shafiq's background, and what about her life made her a feminist?
Thank you for inviting me to talk about a subject that has occupied the last 15 years of my life, Doreya Shafiq. It's interesting that you should introduce Doreya by making the connection to Hoda Sharawi, because what is significant about Doreya Shafiq is that she became the continuation of a movement that started in the early part of the 20th century in Egypt. And as Hoda was establishing a women's organization and founding a journal called L'Egyptienne on women's issues, Doreya Shafiq, who came out of a very different kind of background, was struggling to complete her baccalaureate at a time when there was no girls' school for the baccalaureate, only men. So she got tutored at home with her father and had ambitions to pursue further education. At this point in Doreya Shafiq's life, in the late 20s, 1927, 1928, she was born in 1908, there was a competition in Egypt to commemorate the birth date of yet another interesting feminist, a man by the name of Qasem Amin, who was writing about the emancipation of women and the new woman in the early part of the century. And Doreya entered this competition and won the prize, and as a result of that was invited by Hoda Sharawi to a gathering in Esbekeya Gardens in Cairo in the early part of 1928 to say a few words on behalf of this commemoration. The Egyptian Feminist Union of Hoda Sharawi established the occasion. And in that first essay, titled in French, because it was outside of Cairo, the only opportunity for young women to get educated were the mission schools. And so French was the language of expression at that point. Well, so she wrote a little essay called Un Petit Mot in honor of Qasem Amin, and you could read that article and sense, even at that period, she was a young woman who realized in her surroundings that there were some iniquities that needed redressing. But she had this ambition to go on for higher education, and she shared her desire with Hoda Sharawi, who was rather impressed with this young woman. And Hoda Sharawi picked up the phone, called the Ministry of Education, and said, "We have a young woman here who'd like to go to the Sorbonne." So she got the backing of Hoda Sharawi, and off she went in 1928.
Now, wasn't this an unusual accomplishment for an Egyptian woman of her generation?
Well, it was, and she was not alone. There were 11 other, or 10 others. She was the 11th, but the 10 others were going to England. So in this period, in the 20s, outstanding young women were beginning to be designated and sent abroad. And it was at this time, about 6 months later, that the National University, then called Fuad, now called Cairo University, allowed the first women to enter. So Doreya was off in the Sorbonne, and other Egyptian women were beginning to enter Cairo University.
And at the Sorbonne, she eventually earns her doctorate with two theses,
first degree and came back to Egypt for a while, but then still had this ambition and ultimately completed her doctorat d'état, selecting as her theses, and you're right, at the Sorbonne at that time, you had to do two. Her major thesis was on Egyptian art. Again, she was challenging conventional wisdom about pharaonic religion as not being totally utilitarian, but having an artistic or an aesthetic
art for art's sake.
Art for art's sake, mm-hmm. Which became a thema of her life, actually, in many ways. And her second thesis was on the whole question of women in Islam, pointing out that women had rights in Islam, if only the men would learn how to interpret it correctly. So she published a book. Well, both the books were published in 1940, because that constituted, the completion of her work.
This is Susie Cain, and we're talking to Dr. Cynthia Nelson, a professor of anthropology and dean at the School of Humanities and Social Sciences at the American University in Cairo. And Cynthia has just written a biography published by University Press of Florida on the life of Egyptian feminist Doria Shafiq. And for those of you who might like to order the book, we'll give you an 800 number to call at the end of our conversation. Now, one of the things we haven't mentioned, that while Doria was in Paris getting her doctorate, she meets her husband, a fellow Egyptian, Nur al-Din Ragai, who's studying for his law degree, and they will eventually marry and have two daughters. But when Doria Shafiq returns to Egypt with her doctorate, why is she then rebuffed by the Egyptian Feminist Union that previously supported her?
Well, I think you have to understand that there is a context in which Doria Shafiq is living and when she returns, it is the beginning of the Second World War. And it is a time of an awakened consciousness, I think, in Egypt generally, in which the concerns of Egypt in terms of its own liberation linked to the concerns of women for their liberation. And the earlier movement headed by Hoda Sharawi was in a sense more conformist to and reformist in terms of the kinds of demands, and the strategies of their demands did not threaten or challenge the more traditional notions of what a woman ought to be doing in the public domain, although they did come out in the public domain. Doria herself, being a different type of person who had great ambitions and also an almost inner catalyst that she almost couldn't control it sometimes to challenge the establishment. She wanted to achieve something in a way that was confrontational and was dramatic.
Well, on her return to Cairo, Cynthia, how did Doria develop herself? What opportunities were there for her?
As you pointed out, she had married and she came back and had her children, but there was something still she felt she had to accomplish. There was this sense of mission that she felt was not fulfilled domestically. So she went to the rector and the dean of Cairo University, thinking they would certainly want to employ someone with such a high degree. Only she was turned down, primarily because in their eyes she was far too modern, too Frenchified, and would be rather a distraction to the men in the class. So the mm-hmm. anecdote goes.
We've neglected to mention how beautiful she was.
Yes, and, she was a very outstanding woman in her appearance, very mm-hmm. elegant. So the opportunity to find an outlet came through this entourage of her elitist group that existed in Cairo at this time as the Second World War was unfolding. And Princess Shevikar, a rather notorious princess of the monarchy, Fuad's ex-wife, was establishing a French journal called La Femme Nouvelle that was linked to a philanthropic group that she had organized. And someone gave her the name of Doria Shafiq as someone who would be able to edit and put this thing together. So Doria took the opportunity, knowing full well she would alienate herself from Hoda Sharawi, who was the arch enemy of Princess Shuikar, in the social context of the time. Mm-hmm. And, of course, those who were envious of Dorea's beauty and the acclaim she was getting started to feed the idea that, you know, she has, in a sense, gone to the enemy. And Dorea was rather upset by this, but felt this was her niche in. Mm-hmm. She didn't have a power base. She didn't have the money of Hoda Sharawi. So that she felt if this was an opportunity for her to get a link in, the next step might be possible. Now, what is the next step? Now, here is a time in Egypt where there's a rising sense of nationalism, a rising sense of getting rid of the colonial power, and Arab identity, an Egyptian identity, was very much emphasized. And here is this French-educated woman who's trying to make it publicly. And she senses the criticism around her and decides that one of the ways to get around this is to establish an Arabic journal at the same time, which she did with the help of her husband and one of the key journalists of the time, Ibrahim Abdul.
And the name of that journal was
Bint al-Nil, Daughter of the Nile. Mm-hmm. And that's very significant in understanding Dorea Shafiq, because she had this rather poetic connection to the Nile. In her own poetry, which she wrote beautifully, but in French, the metaphor of the Nile was very much a strong symbol, and that, as a daughter of the Nile...
Mm-hmm. And what kind of influence did these magazines have on the women in Egypt?
They represented a different class image of the woman, in the sense of emphasizing you don't have to... think of your life only in terms of the traditional mode. She wasn't challenging the notion that motherhood wasn't good or that the family wasn't the strong unit, but she said women can also be educated, and an educated woman raises educated children. And so her magazine became a source of ideas of how on a limited income, you could make these kinds of recipes. Mm-hmm. But her editorials were always carrying the message of liberation of the woman.
In 1948, there was a shift there. She founded the Bint al-Nil Union. And then, you describe it in the book, she went on the offensive. So in 51... she leads a march on Parliament. And can you tell us something about that?
Well, I think you have to understand how she moved after founding these journals to founding an organization, because she realized that the word is powerful, but the organized efforts of women is perhaps as powerful, in the sense of being a presence to challenge the seat of power. Now, her initial struggle was toward getting women involved in the decision-making processes. That is to say, not only voting, she wanted women to be elected to the seats of power. Mm-hmm. So as an attempt to challenge the negative reaction of those in power to this move, she organized a march on Parliament out from the American University in Cairo's Ewart Hall, which is just two blocks away, and actually entered into the Hallett Halls, to which no women were allowed, sat in the office of the Senate head, who happened to be ill that day, picked up the phone and called him at home and said, "This is Dorea Shafiq. Bint al-Nil and the women of Egypt are tired of waiting, and we are sitting in your office, and we are here to announce that unless we get some action..."
It's pretty gutsy.
Yeah, she was a gutsy, courageous lady. Some people thought she was a bit too gutsy, too eccentric, mm-hmm. in her strategies. Women didn't do these sort of things. But then later, which was even more dramatic, she led a hunger strike in the journalist syndicate because, of course, the revolution had taken place, and there had been promises that women would be getting their rights, but no women were invited to sit on the Constitutional Committee to write the very Constitution that was going to have an impact on women. She said, no
way. A 50-man commission.
Yes. So she got her colleagues together. Well, she actually initiated it, and then 10 to 11 other women joined her, and for 8 days, they sat in the journalist syndicate saying that they were not going to move until they got some action.
This is Susie Cain talking to Cynthia Nelson, author of a new biography on Egyptian feminist Doreya Shafik. Cynthia, why do you think Doreya's role in Egyptian history has been neglected for so long?
Well, I think it is related to the kind of political transformations that were going on and her dramatic challenge of authority. Her final act of defiance was against Gamal Abdel Nasser in 1957 when she entered the Indian embassy to protest not only the occupation of Egypt by the Israeli army, but also the deterioration of what she considered to be the democratic values in government.
It must have been a painful paradox to Doreya to have helped gain the vote for women, but then to lose her own freedom.
Well, it's true. When the 1956 Constitution gave the women the right to vote, the two women that were elected into Parliament did not include Doreya. And I think that's because she became more and more apart. And that's why I call the book A Woman Apart. Mm-hmm. And she finally, in this act of defiance of Nasser, got herself put under house arrest. And hence, he destroyed her journals and forbade her name to be publicized in the press. And so for 18, 20 years, until she ended her own life, she was missing from history.
Your book is so rich, and there's so much more you cover that we haven't even touched, that I regret that our time is up, but we've been talking to Dr. Cynthia Nelson, author of the new biography of Egyptian feminist Doreya Shafik, published by University Press of Florida. And for those of you interested in obtaining a copy of the book, the toll-free number for ordering the book is 1-800-462-6420. That's 1-800-462-6420. So thank you, Cynthia Nelson, for taking time out of your visit here to New York from Cairo. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Well, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to have a chance to share Doreya with the